Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Manning, the host of Locked On Cavaliers.
I'm Dan Feldman, host of Locked On Pistons.
And so as we've been doing all week, this is a crossover podcast, the Locked On Podcast Network. We're talking about two teams that are in the same division, in the same conference, and played in the playoffs last year in a pretty interesting series. Dan, before we get into some questions, I was really impressed by the Pistons in the playoffs last year. I thought they did a lot better, even though it was a sweep, than I would have expected them to, considering their youth. Did you have any takeaways, broader takeaways from that first round series?
I don't know about anything too broad. I think it was just a continuation of what I'd seen from both teams during the season. The Cavs are really good, and the Pistons are competitive. I was a little disappointed the Pistons didn't get a single game in there. Not shocked by it. And I think that leaves a little bit more motivation for the Pistons next year. And obviously the Cavs have their own motivations. But I really just thought that series, it was a nice tune-up for the Cavs going into the rest of their playoff run. Not that the Pistons deserve credit for Cleveland's championship, but looking back on it, are there any signs you saw that first-round series helped prepare the Cavs for that run?
I mean, I would say so. I think they got a stronger test than I would have expected in the first round. I think it was a very physical series. I mean, you had the Drummond thing. You had Stanley Johnson just saying some really kind of like just some things that were like I find very entertaining. I enjoy having a rookie in the league that is confident like that. I thought that was great. I thought there was these little subplots that really made the Cavs sort of care about that series. Because none of those games were blowouts. Like, yes, the Cavs won kind of comfortably. They weren't always coming down to the last 2 minutes or something like that. But they were not going through those games outscoring the Pistons by 30 points in the first quarter and then rolling. Those were, like, very hard-fought games. And I think it set the tone for what ended up being a very, ultimately difficult playoff run. I mean, yes, they won, but it took a little bit for so much to get there. I mean, they had to come back down from 3-1. They kind of went through that low against the Raptors, and it took them a little bit. And I think the Pistons series really did set the tone for that.
Do you really think the Cavs cared about that matchup? That was sort of the debate here was, well, of course the Pistons care. They're in the playoffs for the first time in a while, and the Cavs are the class of the Eastern Conference. They're so good. I mean, I think in some ways that makes the Cavs seem like rivals to a lot of teams from the Cavs' perspective, there are only so many of those true rivalries to go around. And I think the Pistons were definitely trying to get under Cleveland's skin a little bit. Maybe sometimes it worked, but do you really think the Cavs cared? And then I guess the extension to that is still care about this matchup, this in a rivalry way at all.
I would say that they notice the Pistons now. I mean, having not talked to them really in depth since the playoffs, or had to get a really chance to sort of pick their brains on last season. Because I mean, when you're talking to a guy right after a series, it is sort of not going to be the most informative stuff in a way. Like, right. you're not going to get these thoughtful answers. And the Cavs don't always have the guys that are the most thoughtful in talking. Like Kyrie and Kevin Love, two guys you want to hear from, aren't exactly guys who are going to give you these big eloquent answers on something like the Pistons. But just I think by the language, the body language in that series, and LeBron sort of acknowledging the Stanley Johnson stuff to as much as he did, I think sort of tells you that, hey, they are aware of Detroit. They are aware that they're a team that's going to come for them. And I think they maybe aren't thinking of them as a team that's going to dethrone them this year or a team that's really going to push them in the East. But I think they know that when they face Detroit, whether it's in January or whether it's in the playoffs again, that they know it's not just going to be a team they can break. It's going to be a team that's going to really come at them. And I think in itself, that's a victory for a team like Detroit that is so young and really still has so many years ahead of it to be a contender or at least challenge for the top of the East.
Yeah, no, I definitely think the Pistons looked at being competitive as a victory, maybe even too much so, which leads into something else I wanted to ask you about. So the Pistons, I think for their team building, maybe their big offseason move was signing Ish Smith because they very badly needed a backup point guard. But their biggest money move of the offseason from the outside, obviously re-signing Andre Drummond was the biggest, was for John Luer. And the Pistons were pretty open about, we got John Luer because we want to match up better with Kevin Love. And to me, that seemed like a little bit of an overreaction, that you're not there yet. You don't need to worry about specific matchups. And maybe there are other good reasons for signing John Luer. And they just said that one a little bit too too clearly and glossed over some of the other reasons that were more important to them. But I was curious what you think about whether Lure can move the needle at all as a taller stretch big, when last year really the only player the Pistons had who could handle that or try to handle that was Anthony Tolliver, who plays hard but isn't as tall. And maybe that made things a little bit easier for Kevin Love to take advantage. Do you think that John Lure coming in helps the Pistons in their matchup with Cleveland?
I think it can certainly stretch the defense in a way, but I also sort of, I'm very intrigued by the Boban signing, almost more so than the Lure thing, because I think there's a way to beat Cleveland because Timothy Mozgov isn't on the roster anymore, and they sort of lack, because I don't really believe in Birdman, and I know Tristan's very good, but he could get beat up by a bigger, bigger, more powerful guy. I think having guys like Drummond and Boban could really overwhelm the Cavs. And if you have a guy like Lure who can really make Kevin Love defend, if you can do pick and pops with him, if you can do pick and rolls with him, if you can just make Kevin Love have to chase him around, I think that's super useful. And I think even if it's a little ambitious now to say we want to match up with them directly and try to challenge them right away, I do think it's sort of smart. I do think it's sort of interesting that they want to be there. And I think at the very least, it's a cool thing that they're trying to go for that now, because they made the playoffs last year. And if they were just content with making the playoffs this year, they don't talk about it that way. And it's clear that they have a goal in mind. And I think for a young team, that's sort of useful. I think that's sort of smart.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some utility in it. The question is whether it's worth the very high price they paid and where they are in team building.
Well, did that deal lock them up cap wise? And like, are they like locked in cap wise now for a couple of years with salaries now because of that?
Yeah, pretty much.
So like, I guess that's concerning. I guess I wasn't really thinking about that, but that in itself is concerning. Because it's like Lure is a decent player, but he's not. You know, I mean, he's making over $10 million extra, which seems like a lot for a guy like him. But I don't know. I guess if there's with a cap, I guess it's not too bad, and maybe the cap goes up again. And but I don't know. I guess it's not like he's on the books like through Drummond's prime, at least. And at least now, I look at it this way. In some ways, I think a team like Detroit, if they can get that experience now, and even if Lure helps them do that now, and helps a guy like Stanley Johnson and Andre Drummond and KCP get that experience now against a team like the Cavs in the playoffs, maybe that has some value in a couple of years when the Cavs and LeBron start to decline a little bit, and that vacuum, that power vacuum opens, and then it's a team like them or a team like the Pacers or a team like the Bucks or the Celtics that has to take that top spot. Maybe having a guy like Lure now who even helps you now, even if he's expensive, pays off a little bit in the sense that you're really young guys who need that experience more and are more important to your core and your long-term outlook. At least like they're getting that experience of playing against LeBron and stuff in the playoffs. Maybe that has some value in me, but the financial stuff, I guess, would be a little bit concerning, especially because there are extensions coming up for some of the young guys.
And that's, I guess, leads to another big thing I want to ask you about. Obviously, the Cavs are the class of the Eastern Conference. Who do you look at as the biggest threats this season? I guess let's start with that. Like, who do you see as the biggest threats to the Cavs this season, and how far down the list do you have to go to get to the Pistons?
So not very far, to be honest with you. I'm very, very high in Detroit for a lot of reasons. I like the core, I like the young guys. I think they're going to improve a lot, and I like Van Gundy. So I have them ranked in this order in terms of teams I think that are going to pose a threat to the Cavs. I think the Celtics are my number two because I think Horford helps them a lot. I think they have all these guys they can throw at the Cavs, and I think Brad Stevens is a very good coach. I think they're going to be good, and I think they can do some things that no other team in the East can. Then I have the Raptors. They're going to be good in the regular season again. They're going to do a lot of the same things well, even if they don't have Biombo. Maybe Jakob Poeltl can replace some of that, but they're kind of the same team, and I think they'll have some guys get better, and they're still going to be pretty good. Then it gets sort of interesting because I don't really know what to make of the East outside of the top three. I don't know where you stand on that.
Same place.
It's just like I could see a team like the Pacers finishing fourth. I could see the Hawks finishing fourth. I could see the Pistons finishing fourth. There's only a couple teams, mainly the ones that play in Brooklyn and Philadelphia, and probably the one that plays in Manhattan, that are sort of teams I'm not really super excited about in terms of what they're going to be next year. I think in the best case scenario for the Pistons, I think they could be the the team with the third best odds, so the fourth place team in the East, of taking down the Cavs. And I think like they're probably in that 4-6 range for me with Atlanta, with Indiana.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I also think the Wizards are in that range. I think the Hornets are also in that range, and maybe one of the, like a team like the Knicks or Magic or Bucks can make that come up and join that range. And so it's a little unnerving that, one, I think the Pistons are the best team in that range, and I think because of matchups, and that's the other element to it for the Cavs specifically, I think because of matchups within that range, the Pistons also, not only are they the best of that group, they match up decently well with the Cavs, just by virtue of having so many players they can throw at LeBron, between Marcus Morris, Stanley Johnson, Tobias Harris, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, just a lot of different guys to throw at LeBron over the course of a game, over the course of a potential playoff series. But the danger is, because we're talking about four seeds, like 4 through 10, if you slip up just a little, you might be out of the playoffs entirely.
Right, and as we know with how players develop, progress isn't always linear. Development isn't always linear. So if the Pistons took this really good jump last year, if they struggle this year, if, you know, KCP and Stanley Johnson both struggle this year or something, or at least one of them do, you know, that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, as intriguing anymore. I mean, guys don't just go on these upward curves, and very rarely does a guy just come in and then just improve and become great. I mean, LeBron is, I guess, one of the examples where it's like he actually did it, but Kyrie struggles. Kevin Durant had moments where he struggled. Russ did too. I mean, all these guys, Steph Curry. I mean, look at Curry's career was not linear to the point where he is, you know, arguably the best player in the league right now. Like, whoa, those things don't work like that.
Did somebody covering the Cavs just say that Stephen Curry might be the best player in the league?
I will say this. You probably will, at least amongst the blogosphere, because I don't want to speak for the guys who work for newspapers like Joe Varden and stuff, but I'm probably the least defensive of the Cavs of anyone you're going to find amongst Cavs Twitter.
We're going to have to just keep this our secret that you think Curry might be better than LeBron.
I would say this. I would say LeBron is my number one. But at points last year, I mean, Curry, like, outplayed LeBron. Like, he definitely outplayed LeBron. He was a more effective player in larger for the last years. Like, if I had an MVP vote, it wouldn't have gone to LeBron last year. I still would say if I'm picking one guy to win me a series, it's LeBron. But Curry's freaking really good.
Yes.
And, like, I think people, you know, go at him and clown him and stuff, and his Cavs Twitter does, but he's special. Like, he's really, really good. And, like, it's scary that him and Durant are playing together. Like, that doesn't need to be said. Like, that's not some new original thought by any means. But, like, it's freaking scary that, like, those two guys who are probably, in my book, the second and third best player in the world that are teaming up to playing on a team that already won 73 games. It's crazy. And that's, like, a whole other tangent, and I think, like, that's going to be the most over – talked about story point this year, because it's just, you know, we've been living in that reality for a month, but it just doesn't really seem real.
Yeah, it is. It's unreal. I think as far as the Curry-LeBron debate, I see it pretty similarly as you. I think Curry definitely deserved MVP both those years. And to the point where I thought, I wasn't sure, but I thought, because he had proven it over that larger sample, that he had passed LeBron. He was younger than LeBron. I thought he had passed him, but I wasn't sure. The finals told me I was definitely wrong. Like, LeBron, yeah. LeBron is still the best.
Yeah, like, LeBron can, before we get to your Pistons a little bit, LeBron can just affect games in ways I don't think Curry can. And that, like, Steph Curry, he's great, but he can shoot better than LeBron ever could. But he cannot do the block. Like, he cannot yes. make that block. Like, there are, like, two players in the world who can maybe make that block. Like, that was just a freakish bit of athleticism that, it was just unbelievable.
The Pistons fans listening to this right now, by the way, have just very fond memories of Tayshaun Prince at this moment.
I love Pistons Tayshaun Prince. Oh.
So we can bond over not liking Reggie Miller.
Yeah, a little bit. Reggie annoys me for a lot of reasons. A lot of them TV related, but whole other tangent. To look at your Pistons a little bit, the team you cover and are, you know, potting about. The guy that I think is at the center of everything is obviously Andre Drummond. He's going into his fifth year, and yet I still don't think he's by any means like a finished project. What do you expect out of him as he heads into, you know, he's 23 years old, barely 23 years old. What do you expect out of him as he heads into his fifth year?
He's got to keep making incremental progress, and I hope to see the largest strides on the defensive end. He's just got to get a little bit better in his recognition and coverages, a little bit better in his awareness, because the Pistons need him to be that prime time backline defender who protects the rim and covers their mistakes. They don't have a great defensive team in front of him, but they have enough guys who will compete. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a good defender. He's the exception, but with everybody else, they need Drummond to cover for them, and he's definitely done it in bits and pieces. He's getting better. He has the raw physical tools to do it, absolutely. And then on the offensive end, he's got to either figure out how to make some of these post-ups that the Pistons seem committed to giving him, or ideally just be willing to wipe those away from his game. I think a lot of that is because he wants to do it. It's a similar thing with Dwight Howard. He wants the ball sometimes, and you have to accommodate your star player. I'm sure you know all about that with LeBron.
Yeah, a little bit.
And it pays off sometimes, right? Like, yeah. It's not the end of the world. And then, of course, there's the free throw shooting, but I mostly look at that as not a lost cause. I still hope he's working on it, but I have no pretenses of that coming around.
Yeah, I love Drummond. I think he just has so many physical gifts. I mean, there was like a point like a year ago where I wondered if he was like already better than like a guy like DeAndre Jordan. And I backtracked a little because I thought DeAndre was great last year, but there's just so many physical gifts with Drummond, and he's just figuring himself out a little bit. And I think if there's a coach that's going to do it, and this is not new either, but it's Stan Van Gundy. I mean, he's setting himself up sort of like he did with the Orlando teams with Dwight. And I think the big thing I want to see out of Drummond is I want to see him get back to making around 60% of his field goals. That is like a very good number for a big, and he did it his first few years in a lot smaller, field goal attempts per game. I mean, he went from 5.7 as a rookie to 13.1 last year, and he dropped a little bit. But if he can get back up there, because I mean, the free throw shooting is just like its own thing, and I just don't know how much he ever gets like super good at free throw shooting because of his size. And that's fine, you know, big guys don't always have to be good free throw shooters, but if he can get a shooting percentage up and get his true shooting percentage bump back up to, you know, closer to 60%. I mean, it was under 50% last year. That would be ideal. I mean, it's just like he could be that hub on them for offense and be so good in so many ways, but he just hasn't quite done it yet.
Well, the problem with making him too much of a hub on offense, he's a limited passer. And
no, 100% true.
And he can get a little better. He can't get much worse, but that's, you know, that's going to limit him offensively. It's not going to allow them to expand his role too much. And as far as the shooting percentage, he can shoot a higher percentage. Like he did his first 2 years. It's just a matter of he's trying to expand his game. And this is sort of the struggle of that process, that by trying to diversify his game, maybe it'll pay off in the long run. He's taking more bad shots. He could just cut those out completely and get back to where he was and have a very high percentage.
Yeah. The other guy that I think really fascinates me on this team is Stanley Johnson. I love how he handles himself as a rookie. I love his game. What do you expect out of him in year two? And how big of a role do you think he plays on the Pistons over the next, you know, 5-6 years?
You got to love a guy who just is so confident to go at LeBron like he did. Now his skills have to catch up. He's just a little too rough with the ball in his hands, trying to attack off the dribble, trying to create shots for himself or others off the dribble. Sometimes he's running around with his head cut off defensively, like great effort, great motor, just doesn't always know where he's going. And I just hope he makes incremental progress with that. That's what happens when you draft a teenager. Like those are the growing pains. And, you know, even LeBron had some of those, though he was obviously starting from a much higher point before working his way up. And that's just what it's going to be. There are going to be those growing pains. But with his mindset, his work ethic, those things, like he could make a leap. I don't expect him to take a leap, but he could. And then I think if he does, and I think the odds are against that, but if he does, then maybe the Pistons are up there with the Raptors and Celtics in that second tier in the East instead of one of the better teams in the third tier.
Yeah, it'd be a very, very fascinating development if they were able to get to that point this year instead of having to wait another year or so for that to be a reality. Because I think they're going to get there. And if they did it this year, it would make the East a lot more exciting. Because the East this year, like we've talked about this a little bit already, it's just so all over the place that I just don't really know what to make of it yet.
I don't know if this is more clear or less clear, but who do you think is going to be the next LeBron or next non-LeBron team to win the East? And I'll ask for a 1-2 because I have a guess we're going to have the same number one.
My top two picks would be Boston number one and Detroit number two.
Okay. I also have Boston number one just because I really like their roster and they have all these Brooklyn picks and tons of cap flexibility. And I think that they're in great shape. Number two, I was debating between the Pistons and the 76ers.
Oh, I love the ballsiness of like going all the way down to Philly and just being like, yeah, trust the process. R.I.P. Hinky.
LeBron's just going to have this on lock for 6 years and six more years, and then Philly will be ready.
Yeah, and the Ben Simmons has figured out his gym shot and Joel Embiid's like actually on the court. That'd be unbelievable. I'd be very down for that.
But I think it's a credit to the Pistons that they're in that discussion because I think that should be the goal of teams in the East. Be ready to win when LeBron declines. Whenever that is, it's hard to predict. It's not happening soon, but be ready.
Yeah, and it's a credit to them that a couple of years ago, I don't know if I would have had them at this point this fast. I really don't know if I didn't. It's pretty impressive that they got there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I definitely wouldn't have, but when you can get Reggie Jackson for a couple second rounders, when you can get Tobias Harris for junk contracts, that fast tracks it.
Yeah. Before we wrap this up, let's just do a quick best case, worst case for both teams. So what would you say is the best case scenario for the Pistons? Go ahead.
I've got one. I cannot let you off here without, I got to ask you about Kay Felder. Went to high school, grew up in Detroit, went to high school in Detroit, went to college in Detroit. I think a lot of people back here are rooting for him. I was a little excited that Matthew Dellavedova left in free agency. I was a little excited that Mo Williams is contemplating retirement. Just because I want to see Kay Felder. I don't know if it's a good idea, bad idea, but what are you expecting from him this year?
So I would say this already, that Cavs fans are already like really, really excited about Kay Felder. At Fear the Sword, the site that I edit for, one of the sites that I edit for, we had a Cavs rank thing in his little teaser. He got votes way higher, as high as like 7th or 8th on the team next year, which is I think a little bit high. I did not have him that high. But, I mean, the potential is clearly there. I mean, LeBron, Draymond, Isaiah Thomas have all co-signed him. And I think with Dele gone and if Mo Williams does retire, there's definitely a role there for him to just step into and be the backup point guard from day one. And he could do really well. He's certainly athletic enough. He's fast enough. He's got defensive ability, even though he's very small. I worry about the size, and I worry about his ability to shoot off the ball. But I think he could play as a rookie, and I don't think it's something I would bank on just yet because I feel like there's the Mo Williams thing might not resolve itself just yet. And I think they might have – but I think with them just knowing that they're going to play the long game, then it matters more what shape they are in June than what shape they are in October or in November or whatever. I think that maybe gives him a better chance to get in and play from day one just because – you could definitely argue that a year of Kay Felder developing and getting ready to play when it matters most in June is more valuable than trying to get something out of Mo Williams for however long the NBA season goes.
Yeah, I would like to keep Mo Williams or, sign somebody like Mario Chalmers, although it's obviously more complicated with him, or I was thinking Norris Cole back when he had Rich Paul as his agent. That probably closed that down.
And he's out of Cleveland. He played college basketball right down the street. Like, if you go into downtown Cleveland right now, there's literally still a Norris Cole jersey hanging outside the Wolstein Center on Cleveland State. Like, I worked down there last summer, and I would walk by it every day, and where I parked, and I'd see the Cole jersey. I would always just laugh because it's just kind of random. It's kind of random, but it's cool.
Yeah, so just somebody to raise their floor a little bit, because as excited I am as about Kay Felder, like, he's still the number 54 pick and a rookie, and you don't want to be stuck relying on him. If he wins the job, if he beats somebody who's shown they can be a viable NBA backup point guard, that's great. But just to give him the job by default, I'd still be a little worried about that.
I would be, too. That's what I've been saying in email threads and just pumping the brakes on that, just because I don't know if you bank on a guy from day one, because there are very few rookies, if any rookie. I mean, every rookie struggles. Every rookie goes through these severe growing pains. And if you're the Cavs, you have to kind of judge. You want to have a guy go through growing pains like that when the stakes of your season and the goal of your season is just sort of so clear. And there's not really a lot of room for other accomplishments.
Yeah, I'm with you. But I'm hoping that he can do it.
I mean, it'd be more interesting for me as a guy covering the team to watch him play than to watch Mo Williams play. And I think at the very least, I think he's, if they don't play him, I hope that they would send him to Canton, because it's an hour drive from Cleveland. He can go play there, and then he can still practice with LeBron and with the rest of the guys on the team and learn from them while still actually getting to play, even if it's not against NBA talent every night.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
All right, so Dan, we'll close with the best case, worst case for the Pistons next season.
So I think best case would be sneaking their way into that top tier. I don't think that's likely, but where they could be right in the range with the Celtics and Raptors and even get a 2 seed, make it to the conference finals and lose to Cleveland, win something in the low 50s. I think that's pretty optimistic. Worst case, I think this team has a reasonably high floor. I think they'll be in the playoff race all the way to the end. But worst case would be that middle of the pack in the East being very balanced. And maybe the Pistons aren't that far from the number 5 seed. But that could still mean they finish 9th or 10th in the conference and miss the playoffs.
Yeah, that sounds about right to me. I think I have them pretty firmly in my playoff team just because I'm very high on them. But also, again, it could be possibly that they don't make it.
And so what do you think for the Cavs, best case, worst case?
This is sort of like hard to make interesting because I think obviously the best case is that they repeat as champs. Like, I think that is clearly the best case scenario just because I don't really see something – like there's no other goal for that team. The best case is that they repeat. Though I think the worst case, and that if it's sort of a doomsday scenario for a lot of reasons, is that if they lose in the conference finals to a team like Boston or a team like Detroit – no team will dominate the East forever. LeBron is going to lose at some point, probably. Although, I mean, we've been wondering that for years, I guess, if it's going to ever happen. But I think if it was this year, that would be the worst case scenario. If they lose in 6 games or 7 games or whatever, it doesn't really matter how many games, I guess. Nuance it does, but broadly it doesn't. If they did lose in the Interconference Finals, I think everyone expects them to make the finals. I think it'd be a major disappointment if they didn't, especially if they go in and it's a team at full health and playing good basketball. If they just get flat out beat, I think that would be the worst case scenario. It'd be a little different if, let's say, LeBron is hurt or Kyrie is hurt or something. That would sort of take away from a team dethroning them because they'd have that ability to say, oh, yeah, they're hurt, because those things do matter, even if, you know, they get made fun of for talking about it on Twitter. But I think the worst case would definitely be them losing earlier than expected. And East Conference Finals to me seems like the place, if they were going to lose, it would be there.
Yeah, I'm mostly with you. I guess with the caveat that if they're going to lose, and beyond injury, because, yeah, any best case, worst case scenario, yeah, they could have catastrophic injury. And I don't think that's worth talking about unless it's a team like the Knicks where there's a real history of injury.
they're waiting for that whole team. It's like miss like 30 games.
But if the Cavs stay reasonably healthy, the only way I think they lose is if it's just a real bad matchup, and I don't even know what that would look like, against a team that's like shooting really hot from the outside. So that could happen in the second round. It could happen in the conference finals. I don't think anybody they'd play in the first round would be good enough to challenge them, even if everything goes right. But I don't necessarily see it as more likely to be the conference finals or the second round where they'd get that bad matchup. It's just luck of how the standings roll out. And then, of course, best case scenario. We all know what that looks like.
Yeah, it's LeBron getting another title, beating the Warriors again, and sort of cementing himself in a way that a few other guys would really have the other opportunity to do.
Which he just did.
Yeah,
and it would be the magnitude of the second one would be incredible.
Yeah, I can't even like fathom what it would be like, just because it's so far away and because it's still so fresh as someone who grew up in Cleveland and then ended up covering the team as a journalist and stuff. It's just like so weird to think that like he did that and then a year later he could be in the position to do it again against a team that is more overwhelmingly favored to win it all. It would just be sort of it'd be sort of crazy, and you know, just because of who he is, it's going to be sort of a petty process along the way.
Yes.
All the Godfather tweets.
Before you look forward to that next one, enjoy this one.
Yeah. It's the city of Cleveland, as you know, as someone who's on basketball Twitter, has not let it go. every day you will see someone remind you that the Cavs
3-1.
3-1. And LeBron had the championship edition Kermit, the Kermit Frog meme hat. I actually don't know a good way to describe that meat other than the drinking tea, because tea lizards a terrible way to describe it. they're not drinking tea. Yeah, it's just Kermit drinking tea, and he did it with the Larry O'Brien trophy. But yeah, it's gonna be cool. I mean, it's gonna be even crazier if the Indians somehow make the World Series. Game one of the World Series is the same night as the Cavs' ring ceremony and opening night against the Knicks. They're literally gonna be about.
You know, we just had this nice conversation about basketball.
Yeah,
you said some nice things about the Pistons. I said some nice things about the Cavs. Now you got to bring up the Indians.
Danny Salazar is hurt. I can't even like say nice things about the Indians right now. Doomed.
It was a sore subject, the way the Tigers play them. I think we got to end this one right here.
So this has been another crossover podcast in the Locked On Podcast Network. Make sure you like and subscribe both podcasts. Subscribe to the whole freaking network. They're all pretty great. Like us and rate us on iTunes. And Dan, where can people out there find you on Twitter if they're so inclined?
I'm at Dan Feldman, NBA.
And you can find me on Twitter at CWM Rights. And thanks to Dan for coming on. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.